Good morning, everybody. Hello. Maybe it's afternoon or evening where you are, whenever you're listening. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we are turning towards life this morning again, as we do every Sunday. Today is a wonderful sunny day in London where I am, and it's a wonderful day also because we're having a little third space gathering. So if you are listening live and you forgot that we were doing that and you'd heard about it, please come along. We'd love to see you. And we're going to be gathering just for a simple picnic with people in our community, which feels very amazing. And also, Justin, very lucky that the weather is good for it, because as we know, as Great Britainers, it's never guaranteed at all that we'll be able to do what we want outside. So I'm feeling really grateful for that this morning. We're going to be in the park. And what a lovely day to do it, and what a lovely way to start the day that we're doing that, Justin, is to do this together. It's really wonderful. And we'll be seeing each other in body later as well, which is really a gift. So we have a source this week chosen by Justin. If you're new here, what we do is that we alternate who chooses the source, and we bring things from whatever we're reading or poetry that we love or things that fall into our inboxes or come through friends or colleagues or anything in the world that feels like it belongs here. And this year, this time, Justin's brought something from the wonderful Oliver Berkman. And I have his book right above me here on my desk. And I'm really excited to get into this with you, Justin, and to feel into Oliver Berkman's understanding and interpretation of the world so that we can learn from him and learn from the way that he says things.
Thank you, Lizzie. Hello, everyone. Welcome. One day, Lizzie, we should remember to tell everybody here about the Third Space Picnic, which we forgot to do this year. And then all of you who are listening, whether you want to travel in from places afar, or if you happen to be living in or visiting London, you can come and hang out with us, which would be really lovely. Next spring or summer, we'll remember to do that. I'm looking forward to seeing you later. And I'm feeling very grateful to Oliver Berkman. Oliver, if you ever get to hear this, thank you for your extraordinarily luminous and powerful and helpful writing. It's a great privilege to be able to include this. So this is from Oliver's twice monthly newsletter. And Lizzie, I was thinking, I didn't get to say this to you before we started, but one of the things that's on my mind in choosing this source is, as you, of course, know, and maybe everybody who listens to us know, that being up to a kind of work in the world that we call coaching, although coaching is a very complicated and ambiguous term that means lots and lots and lots of different things. And I sometimes wonder if it's really the right word for what we do, but it's the best word we have. The way that we do coaching involves talking to people about themselves. Which not every kind of coaching does. You know, we really take a lot of care to get to know people deeply and fully and well, and then be able to talk with them about what they're in the midst of in their lives. And one part of what there always is to talk with people is the burdens that they carry. And this source was so, I found so helpful for that topic. So this is for anybody who coaches other people, but it's also for all of us who live lives in which we encounter burdens, or where maybe we have loved ones who are carrying something very heavy as well. It's called Don't Lighten the Burden. And if you want to sign up to Oliver's email newsletter, www.oliverberkman.com, Berkman has an E in it, you can, after the K, you can sign up there, and there's a link in the show notes and in the on our website. Don't lighten the burden. The British-born Zen master Hu Jiu Kennet said of her teaching style that her goal wasn't to lighten the burden of the student, but to make it so heavy that he or she would put it down. I had a full body reaction the first time I encountered that in the basement shelves of Watkins, the esoteric London bookstore. Tears pricked behind my eyes. The relief. To me, the phrase meant this: you can slog through life, and I had been slogging through life, trying to get on top of things, trying to reach the point at which you feel like you know what you're doing, trying to fix your flaws or make yourself emotionally invulnerable. All of that is an attempt to lighten the burden, and there are 1,000 self-help gurus on standby promising to aid you in the effort. But making the burden heavier, that means seeing that as a finite human, you'll never get on top of everything, never fully understand what makes others tick, never immunize yourself from distress. The burden of reaching that goal is an impossibly heavy one, and so you put it down. You let your shoulders drop and your muscles unclench, and then crucially, you're free to actually be here, actually do stuff, actually show up. You get to climb life's mountains without lugging a huge rucksack full of steel ingots on your back the whole way, which is both easier and much more fun.
Thank you, Justin. So this is by Oliver Berkman, and this little passage is named Don't Lighten the Burden. The British-born Zen master, Hoon Ju Kennett, said of her teaching style that her goal wasn't to lighten the burden of the student, but to make it so heavy that he or she would put it down. I had a full-body reaction the first time I encountered that in the basement shelves of Watkins, esoteric London bookstore. Tears pricked behind my eyes. The relief. To me, the phrase meant this: you can slog through life, and I had been slogging through life, trying to get on top of things, trying to reach the point at which you feel like you know what you're doing, trying to fix your flaws or make yourself emotionally invulnerable. All of that is an attempt to lighten the burden. And there are 1,000 self-help gurus on standby promising to aid you in the effort. But making the burden heavier? That means seeing that as a finite human, you'll never get on top of everything, never fully understand what makes others tick, never immunize yourself from distress. The burden of reaching that goal is an impossibly heavy one. And so you put it down. You let your shoulders drop and your muscles unclench. And then, crucially, you're free to actually be here, actually do stuff, actually show up. You get to climb life's mountains without lugging a huge rucksack full of steel ingots on your back the whole way, which is both easier and much more fun.
One of the things I'm thinking about, Lizzie, has been, I'm certainly going to come back to talk about my own experience of me as we talk. But actually, where I want to begin is, as I read Oliver's writing, and this piece, by the way, goes on to tackle two or three other wonderfully powerful topics. I really recommend to everyone to read it in full. How often recently in the work that I've been doing, Lizzie, and the coaching that I've been doing, I've been speaking with people who are starting to realize that they've been carrying the equivalent of a huge rucksack full of steel ingots, trying to climb a mountain, and in one way or another, constructing their whole lives around the premise that I will get to the top of the mountain, and therefore I have to carry all of this. And it might be, I'm thinking particularly at the moment of people who I'm speaking to who are men in their 40s and 50s who've dedicated themselves to a particular kind of working life and who've carried it in a narrative that's been handed to them by, I know, their families, by the culture that we live in, that says, you have to carry your life in a particular way. And for the particular group of people that I'm speaking to, quite a lot of people who are working with this coming my way these days, it's sort of a combination of work till you drop, give up everything for that, and then maybe one day on the other side when you've got to the top of the mountain, Everything will be fine, and you'll be on the sunny highlands of the. And I've come to realize, and Oliver's writing has really helped me here, that there's one way of responding to that, to hearing that, is to be deeply compassionate to people, is to recognize. I can see that what you're doing comes from a great kind of dedication. I understand that you've taken this on maybe to take care of a family or a partner or an image or a something that really matters. And that it's very important to see the goodness in what, the good intention in what someone is up to. And that's not enough. That would be making the burden lighter if I sit with you, Lizzie, and I go, oh, I really see how hard this is and how hard you're working. Yes. But there's really very often a part of it that involves saying to someone, really pointing out what's not okay or what's not working or what the cost is of living in something that we may have entered into with good intention. And I think that's what Hunju Kenet means here about making the burden so heavy that you can't carry it. And I've started asking people, I've been asking people for a long time. So doing everything I can to meet their own goodness and their own good intention, to name it compassionately with them, but then also to point to the shadow side of the something that they're up to. And one way I've been doing that often recently is just simply asking the question, what really happens if you continue along this path? What do you think the outcome actually is going to be? And although the first story very often is, oh, I'll do this for another 10 years, I'll do this for another 15 years, and then actually what often people say is, I think I'll die. I think I'll have a heart attack or a stroke or a something. That given an opportunity to make the burden as heavy as it really is, like to really feel the possibility of it, that it's only at that moment that something happens, the naming of, oh, I am actually trying to carry an impossibly heavy weight up an impossibly tall mountain, although I have a fantasy that this will bring me somewhere. Actually, what I can tell most truthfully is that this never works out. It's very moving every time to hear that, and I can see it, lots of versions of the same kind of thing in myself. So not that one, but other ones. For example, if I here's one that's really plagued me in my life many different times, and it really took seeing how heavy the burden was, how impossibly heavy the burden was, to even begin to do something about it. If I agree with people all the time, if I make myself amenable, if I make myself try to get myself liked by everyone, then I'll belong. And it's very easy to take that as a lifelong project. And when it doesn't work out, when it, as it often didn't for me, my conclusion would be, I'm just not hauling myself up this mountain with heavy ingots on my back hard enough. I'm obviously not being likable enough. I'm obviously not being agreeable enough. I need to double down on that effort. And anytime anybody in my life said to me, oh, how lovely, you're such an agreeable person, all of those kind of things, all it did was it saw something true in me, but all it did was, what's the word? Amplify my efforts to do something totally impossible, which I think so many of us are trying to do. We've taken on a story that is totally impossible about who we're meant to be and how to belong in the world. And it was only when I started to see, and people were brave enough to start to talk to me about what's actually happening from being an agreeable person all the time, that I started to see that I was carrying something impossibly heavy. And although it was incredibly painful to start to put it down, to really find out what do I think, what do I feel, what do I want to say, frightening and whatever, it was also, as Oliver Berkman writes, and I think he's writing about the narrative of getting everything done, that narrative. such a relief to find out that there was an incredibly big cost to the way I've been carrying myself in my life, my whole style of carrying myself in my life, and that the solution to it or the response to it wasn't best just trying to get better at that, but actually learning to put down the thing I'd been doing. And that's why this piece, I think, is so powerful and so helpful, because it's easy to be very, very critical of other people, but what's hard to do well is to really love someone enough, really see their goodness enough, to speak to them about the way in which the life project that they've taken up is an expression of their goodness that is carrying them nowhere near where they long to be. And we have to be both loving and brave in order to do that. You know, sort of loving on its own, oh, you're such a great person trying to get everything done. I so admire you. That's not enough, nor is just poking somebody in the eye with a sharp stick to get them to stop. Neither of that is enough. And I suppose what I'm wanting to do here is to sort of honor the arts of others, those around us, and wonder about who we can be when we see somebody we love who is carrying an impossible burden. Can we not just soothe them, but help them actually to see that maybe putting it down is the thing to do?
When I'm listening to you, Justin, I'm feeling a very, very kind of heavy and achy heart. Yeah, I can feel a huge big ache in my chest at the, and I'm really curious as to what's happening. But it's, I think one of your gifts, Justin, is that when you articulate suffering in the world in some way, in whatever way we're up to all of these human things, like you do, it's so possible for me to, and I think many others too, to kind of connect to that thing. I think the way that you speak really enables that and invites that. And I'm so grateful because it puts me in touch with things that I wouldn't in this moment be in touch with if I wasn't talking to you. And I'm just thinking of all of the ways that it's so difficult to know that if you put something down, there's something else there. It's so difficult to trust that if you stop pleasing people, there's another world available. Like how am I supposed to know that? Like I've done that for so long and it's been my tactic and my means of getting through the world. How am I supposed to know there's another way if I'm not listening to other people and opening and finding the when things go wrong in that narrative, in that story of being liked or whatever, how am I to know that when that goes wrong, that's an opportunity rather than something awful happening? And I can't help but feel as well the parts of the pieces of our lives, the times in our lives when really everything does go horribly wrong. It feels that way. And it really is that way, that there is something else here. And I think that's what I find so precious about the work that we do, that, as you said, is called coaching, but we're not sure that's the right word. But being someone and being in that kind of opening with people that doesn't feel like an opening at all. It feels like devastation and falling apart and not knowing what else there is. What else is there other than to work hard and to carry the bag of ingots? What else is there? That's my life. What are you talking about? I can't do anything else other than carry the bag of ingots up the mountain. And then to be an opportunity and an understanding of the possibilities of life that include the person much more, and which can say, I stand with you here. And there's another way. There's a different way to live than this one. And this making it heavy so that we can put it down, being someone who can do as you're saying, Justin, and point out the suffering and let it be said, you know, let it be told that this isn't okay and I'm probably going to collapse at some point. And then finding a way to build a new world together of how to live. It just feels very moving to me that that's possible. And I guess I want to be testament to that. I want to be declarative of that because I know it's possible. Really thinking of the places either in my life or others' lives where things really have fallen apart in horrible ways. And life gets to be different on the other side. But often life gets to be different on the other side because someone stood with us, somebody did something, somebody spoke to us in the way that you're suggesting, somebody took us somewhere that we needed to go by the hand, even though we didn't want to go. And we said, okay, I'll have a go because I'm on my knees. And that's really moving to me that that's possible in the world and that that's what we're doing. And I think that's where my kind of heartache comes from in this moment, is because those moments feel very, very tender and scary. And there's so much at stake and it feels huge. And yet there is something on the other side of it. There is a different way than carrying the ingots in this way. And when you were talking, Justin, you were talking about seeing people and then also saying what you can see about the suffering in something. And I was thinking, what feels also important to me is to value who that person really is and what they might get up to if they did put this down. Like having the vision of someone's possibility if they didn't carry on doing this forever. And placing this deep value on that and being able to imagine that. And the gift of being human is that we can imagine. We can make up stories that are more liberating and less constrained, that we can present as a possibility, that we can talk into, that allows ourselves to imagine a life that's a different one than this one in terms of the way of being that we have, not necessarily the circumstances. I was thinking of those people that you're talking to, not giving up their jobs or doing anything particularly circumstantially different, although maybe that might happen. But there's also a way of engaging with something so in a different way that doesn't leave you completely spent at the end of the day. When I relate it to my life, there are ways that I can be a mum that leave me completely, like Oliver Berkman saying, burdened with, am I ever going to get this done? Are my children ever going to be this? Am I going to, my intense period of mothering at the moment, am I going to give my children the right food? There's so many burdens inside of it, such a big job. And I can also see that there's opportunities for liberation everywhere if I take them. I could just be completely under a mound of responsibility and just lie there and just be there for 20 years or however long it takes to not be so intensely mothering. I don't know the answer to that yet. Or I could see the opportunities for joy and I could see the opportunities for filling up my own life force with things that bring me joy. I can join in with everything rather than be the one in the kitchen doing all of the stuff all the time. I don't have to take up those stories, but it doesn't mean that I leave my house and run away and don't be a mother anymore. It's that I find ways of being here that are life-giving to me as well. And I think that's what the kind of magic and the beauty is that's unimaginable. In those moments when I'm completely like under the mound of everything of what I'm supposed to be doing and who I'm supposed to be being as a mother. And then I have a conversation that suggests I could be here in a different way. I don't have to leave in order for suffering to be relieved, that I could actually be here in a different way. Then I'm starting to be interested because I'm not leaving, but I do need to be here in a way that includes me rather than I'm sacrificing everything and I don't know who I am anymore kind of thing. So I love it that this is where this passage has taken you, Justin, because it's such a brilliant way of talking about the wonderful, mysterious, and also very real possibility that there are very different ways of being in different circumstances that bring about very different results. One, as you say, has me just flop down in some terrible health situation, and one that has me be filled with meaning and life and joy and possibility and I'm not doing anything circumstantially different.
Like you say, it was so exciting hearing you talking about it this way, Lizzie. And like you say, some of what any of us are wrestling with may well be circumstance. That there may be things that we ought to change about our circumstance. I ought to leave this job. I ought to, whatever it is. And a lot of it is not the circumstance itself. It's our relationship to the circumstance. So mothering or fathering or parenting is a great example of this because it's a situation that once we're in it, we're in it. Right? You might be able to leave a job, but you can't leave being a parent once you're a parent. So the solution to what's difficult, the response, the life-giving response to what's difficult, I think is a much better word than solution, isn't going to come from changing the, oh, I'm now a father. I'm now a mother. It's going to come from changing, having a different relationship to it. And one, and that's what Oliver's writing about too, about being in relation to being the one who gets it all done. There's still going to be the same long list of things that need to be done. That's never going to change. And in fact, the peril in the I'm going to get to the top of that list is when we find out that we're never going to get to the top of the list. So now what? One bit of language that I've increasingly found very useful is to think about one way of talking about is to talk about the relationship that we have towards the circumstances that we're in. Like another way is talking about the story or the narrative that we have, like who am I taking myself to be in this? But another way of talking about it is the style in which we come at it. What's the style of mothering or fathering or working? My whole way of comporting myself in relationship to it, which includes how I move and how I talk and how I breathe and how my body goes and how I relate and how I think. And all of those things are amenable to our working with because if you look around other people, to go out on the street and watch people move, you'll see that people move in so many different ways, move through their lives in so many different ways. And you said something really striking that I just in a way want to say back to you in appreciation for what you said. Is that what really helps when we're working with supporting others is appreciating their goodness and their uniqueness and their what's the sacredness, I think is the way I would say what back. This is an actual precious, sacred person really trying to do something in their life and to really see and feel the goodness that they're bringing to that, even though the path and the style in which they're walking the path might be an impossible mountain. So that's part one. Part two is being able to name, compassionately name the suffering and not turn away from it. I can see that if you continue to mother in a way that buries you under a pile of boulders every day, it's going to ruin you. Or I can see that if you work like this, you're going to drop dead. And people do. I can see the cost. We need to be able to say that to one another and not just paper it over and not just ignore it and not just pretend everything's fine when there's somebody in front of us who's suffering and carrying an impossibility. And then the third thing that really helps to be able to do is to imagine another way. And like you said, that's the most impossible thing. And as you were talking, not impossible, sorry, wrong language. That's the thing that feels most impossible when we're caught in the instrument. I can feel in my body, my own body, the sense of terror at realizing that my strategy of getting liked by everybody was going to lead to disaster, but I could not imagine what else one would do in that circumstance, what else I would do that would also not lead to disaster, because my whole style of carrying myself was predicated upon if I'm really disagreeable, or if I really hold my line on something, or if I allow for any kind of vulnerability in myself, or whatever it was, my whole world is going to fall apart. So now what? I'm caught between an impossible mountain to climb, because getting liked by everyone's never going to work. And in fact, it's caused many giant disasters. But I can't be something else, because that's disaster too. And so then we need somebody to come alongside us, like you said, with the imagination to say, here's another way that you're goodness, your qualities, your capacities, your love, your care, your aliveness can be brought into the world. There really is another way to honor all of that, which isn't a kind of self-abandonment. I'm not telling you about a way of abandoning yourself and becoming someone else. I'm having the generosity to think about with you and alongside you and to bring as a gift ways of talking about a different style that you could take on in your life that would really honor the person that you are, that would liberate the person that you are. So right in the middle of our mothering and fathering and parenting and being a partner and working and being a creative person and, you know, all the things that we do in our lives, there really are other ways. But when we encounter the breakdown, the falling apart of the story that we've been in, and it just seems like I have no idea where to turn, that's when it really, really helps to someone who, to have someone who's courageous and loving and creative enough to come alongside us and to say, I've got some language for one other way, for another way that you could be in the midst of this, so that you're not underneath the boulders all the time in your parenting. And it is very often hard to do on our own, which is why teachers like Punji Ukennet, who can make the burden heavy enough, but also is one of the things I love about the work that we've got committed to and that we teach as well, Lizzie, is then being creative, compassionate people who have studied life enough to be able to say, I can see alternatives. Let's work out together what it might be to begin to take some even very small steps into living in a way that has got more freedom and fullness for you and those around you in it.
And Justin, being those people, and we've spoken about this many times before, I think, which is not moving away when we see the difficulty. I think we're so prone to kind of dancing the dance that someone's having us dance when things aren't okay. You know, to be the person who just admires somebody consistently for how hard they work, or, you know, goes drinking with the person who really shouldn't be drinking. You know, we participate because it's easier that way than to be the person who says, I don't think we should be doing that, or I'm not sure this is right for you. You know, I remember the story that you told me about when your wife Davina came and said you realize how unhappy you are. Like being a person who does that rather than, oh, I'm just going to keep making Justin cups of tea so he keeps working, and then we don't really have to have a conversation about anything, and we'll just be normal humans or something. But to actually value who you are, you know, she valued your gift in the world and knew who you were properly, and knew that this wasn't the game that you should be playing and the way you should be living. And to be that one who goes, I'm not going to come for a drink, but can we have a conversation about what's happening with you at the moment? And would you be open to that? You know, to be someone who keeps the door open for even if the conversation doesn't happen right then. And maybe the conversation didn't happen between you and Davina right then, but it happened at some point, where you knew that someone could see that there was a different way. So to be the person who holds the door open for the different way, even if the conversation isn't right now, even if it's not some kind of immediate relationship that means a different possibility gets painted right there, but to walk around in the world in relationship to the people that we care about, being a stand for and keeping the door open for possibility is a very different way of living than just dancing the dance that the social norms would have us dance.
There's so much more to talk about here, but I'm very, very glad we found a way to talk about this in this way. Thank you, as always, Lizzie, for bringing such fierce intelligence and wisdom and huge love into everything we're talking about and everything that we're doing. I'm leaving this conversation feeling, do you know what? I woke up feeling very burdened by many things and just being in this conversation about possibility together. About that there are ways that we can bring ourselves and we can help one another. We can be skillful in doing that is in opening and touching. So Lizzie, thank you as always for being such an excellent partner in this grand endeavor, both of Third Space and then specifically this very, very long conversation we're in. Thank you also to all of you for being with us. Oh, my chair is just going down. I sit myself up here. Thank you for being with us. Many of you we know are with us week in, week out, and some of you join us just when the time feels right, and you're all equally welcome. If you would like to support us, a couple of ways you can do that. Leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Sign up to our email, which you can do at turningtowards.life, and then you'll have us straight in your inbox every week. And if you go to turningtowards.life, there's also a place you can buy us a cup of coffee, which is a practical as well as a metaphorical way of supporting this endeavor. And if that feels like a way that you like to support things, we really welcome that. We'll post a link to the whole of Oliver Berkman's article in the notes to this episode. And all being well, we'll see you again next week. Bye bye,
Thanks,
everyone.
everybody. Bye.